Evan, it's been a long time. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great, guys. How y'all doing?
Right. We're doing just fine, and we haven't had a chance to talk to you since, you know, the way it came to an end there in Houston, and Mike and I were both really surprised by that. Now that you've had a little time to sort of let it sink in, the way the thing works out, you go to the conference final a year ago, and you get fired so early into a season the following year. What are your emotions as you sort of look back on the way this thing broke down?
He said it so nicely, the way it all went down. I got kicked to the curb. You can just call it. I was surprised. I really was. I thought that you built up a little equity there for a few years. And, you know, we started off the season. Actually, we started off starting in the summer. James had hurt his ankle a bit. He was in very poor shape coming into camp. Dwight couldn't do back-to-back practices. Talking about Dwight not doing back-to-back games until maybe the new year. Ty Lawson had spent most of the summer with some legal problems and rehabbing and trying to, you know, and I mean not rehabbing, injury rehabbing, and a couple other things. And, I mean, both of our power forwards, Monty Yunus and Terrence Jones, weren't starting camp. We were a bad team in camp. I mean, like I said to the ownership and to Daryl and everybody, I said, we haven't had good practices yet. I can't understand how we're going to have good games, you know. Our last exhibition game against San Antonio, the guys really tried amping it up, and they just pounded us. And I was like, we have a month-long time of getting everybody back in shape, getting everybody acclimating, getting, you know, trying to figure out how to use Ty Lawson into the mix and stuff. So when they let me go, I was absolutely shocked. I really was. I walked in there, and they basically pretty much said, you know, we're firing you. I went, oh my. So I guess that's just kind of the way it went down. I was really surprised too. The team last year had won 56 games, had got to the conference finals, and it wasn't like that team was, holding hands and singing Kumbaya every day. I mean, there was always a few things going on with that team. It's just the way that the group is together. But, you know, we managed it, and we worked our way around it, and some things we discussed as a team, some things we just let go as a team. But I was very surprised in the end, that they chose to make that decision. But, now I'm sitting in Scottsdale having a cup of coffee and going to play golf today. So I guess everything is not all bad.
Listen, there's nothing wrong with that at all. But I'm just amazed. You sat down, they just said you're fired. I would imagine there had to be more reason, unless they couldn't think of a good reason, of why so early in the season to fire a coach. I mean, what was their reasoning?
Well, they said the team wasn't playing well. I said, yeah, I noticed that. I was sitting on the bench while we were getting pounded every night. They said, we're not playing well. And I said, no, we're not. I mean, I can't argue that. I said, but, you know, I said, the only thing really I said was, I think the team will come around. I think it's, you know, right now, they're 27 and 28. They're a much better team than a 27 and 28 team, the Rockets are. Like I say, they won 56 games last year. Don't have the best chemistry in the world. A lot of times whatever professional sports it is, you may not have the perfect fit of guys, but you can make that fit work. I mean, You know, anybody who's been involved in the professional sports knows that a lot of teams, they're not, going out every night and hanging out. They're not the best of friends, but they're very professional. They work, they get their job done. So basically they looked at me and said, we're not playing well. And I honestly, there's nothing I could say to that besides, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, well, they were playing well when you were there. I mean, last year they take the team all the way to the conference final again. There's no point in reliving that. We all understand. All right, Kevin, let me ask you two questions about specific things there, because there are these outside perceptions and you're a lot closer. One of them is that every decision in Houston, more than maybe any other professional sports franchise right now, is being made based on numbers. Daryl Morey, who's a guy that he and I went to the same alma mater. We've talked a lot about analytics, and I believe in a lot of that stuff. But obviously, they're not the answer to everything. That Houston bases more on that than pretty much any other franchise. Just how much of that is actually true?
They probably use more metrics than most other teams. When I first got there, we had a lot of discussions about metrics and about, what certain things meant. And I really believe Daryl is transitioning into, of course, using metrics. That's kind of that's what he does. But he understands chemistry, and we talked about chemistry. When I first got there, we had talked about a lot of stuff. And, I think, honestly, that Daryl is moving a little bit more towards a blend. To me, I think metrics is a tremendous tool to use, but it can't be your whole toolbox. I mean, there's still so many other things that you've got to look. You've got to look at players and say, do they fit? Do they fit the eye test? Or am I just getting a bunch of the same type players? Do I have enough guys that can drive the ball to kick to the shooters? Do I have enough shooters to receive the ball? Good catch and shoot. Do good catch and shoot guys. Do I have a blend of players that can mix together? Do I have multiple position players that can play, that can guard two and three spots, and a lot of different things like that. And I really do believe they're much more, they're still involved in metrics, but not quite as much as I think as everybody thinks it is. I do believe it's a big part of it, but not all. In my mind, like I said, I think metrics is a great tool to have in your toolbox, but that's like having a hammer in your toolbox and only having a hammer. Yeah, you need some other tools.
The other one I have, and again, Kevin McHale is with us here, is about Dwight. And when he signed in Houston, my first thought was, this is the best decision anyone has ever made, because he needs to just go and lock himself in a room or in a gym with Kevin McHale and just work on footwork and work on offensive game. You may have done that as well as any big man in the history of the sport. I think there's a perception he hasn't done that he hasn't worked as much as he should have on his offensive game, that maybe he loves some of the things that come with basketball more than he loves the nitty-gritty of basketball. You're there day by day. Is that a fair criticism?
I'll tell you what. Dwight came to Houston, and after we signed him, he could barely move. He had the back surgery. That limited him to what he could do a lot. He came there. You know, Dwight is no longer a spring chicken. You know, I mean, he's got some miles on him. He's had the knee surgery. He's had the back surgery. Dwight just didn't have a lot of time to. I mean, we worked on things, and Akeem Olajuwon came over, and we worked on things. I just think Dwight's mobility has really been hampered by the back surgery that he had in L.A., and he actually played there in L.A. And then all the different rehabs, he's missed a ton of games, which he never did in the past, and he really has a hard time. You know, really, the biggest thing about getting effective in the post is a low center of gravity, so you can move, spin, and have balance. It'd probably be no different than a defensive lineman has to get low man wins. He can't get low. He has a really hard time getting low. He's very upright. I think that's really hurt him more. You know, Dwight is not a bad. I mean, I heard a lot of people say, "Oh, he's a bad guy. He's a chemistry killer." All this stuff. No, he's not. He really isn't. Dwight competes really hard. Really wants to win. It's not a criticism. The only reality of Dwight is after he loses, 5 minutes later, he's over that loss, whereas, I know when I played and coached, when you lost, I was just miserable and I wanted to be miserable. I think there was something about that misery that made me a better coach, made me a better player, because I just kind of wallowed in that misery. And I was always amazed when guys could kind of, turn the page really quickly like that. But he is not, Dwight is not the problem in Houston, but he's also really not the solution either. It's not like, that Dwight's going to get younger in mobility. So, he worked at it. I just think that his inability to get low, his inability to, losing some of his athleticism and stuff has just hurt Dwight a great deal. But he will not be the only really, really athletic guy in the history of the league that got hurt and lost some of his effectiveness.
So where he is now in his game, all those things you just said, if the what most basketball people think is if he opts out of his deal and is a free agent, can he go somewhere, maybe get a max deal, and be the main cog or a main cog on a championship team?
Wow. I mean, it would have to be a team uniquely designed around Dwight's ability to roll the basket, draw people in the paint. His ability to still rebound the ball very well from a defensive standpoint. Defensive rebound, he'll get to the offensive glass for you. He has a hard time on pick and rolls. He used to be able to switch pick and rolls, move his feet, get out in the perimeter. He just has a hard time doing that anymore. I would answer no. I don't think that's the case with Dwight anymore. But I think Dwight can be a piece of a team that can really help you. But how many teams now? I mean, you look at it, how many teams now are playing small? How many teams are going away from the, legitimate big time center, and playing so different? I know us playing against Golden State, my biggest fear was when they put Draymond Green to guard Dwight, and then Dwight had to go out and chase Draymond Green. That was that for us really, really hurt us. We really had no answers for that. So, boy, I don't know. I hear a lot of people saying that. It's so hard to say. You know, never. It would never happen. But it would have to be a very unique situation.
Mike and Mike, the great Kevin McHale is with us here. One quick thought on Golden State. You were on a team that many people say is the greatest team of all time, the 86 Celtics, and certainly that era you guys were among the great teams ever, and you played against the Showtime Lakers, and you've seen them all come and go. This Warriors team might break the all-time wins record. They're running away and hiding. They might win back-to-back championships. Do you think if they break the all-time wins record, will you be willing to say that's the greatest team of all time?
Oh, I mean, look, I would have lost a lot of money because I would have bet everything that 72 win Bulls team would never be beaten. That and Wilt's 100-point game. I never saw those two records going down. Golden State has a chance to break that record. Yes, I will tell you right now, they break that record in today's game of 2016. They will be the best assembled team to play with the rules the way they are and everything else, because the eras are all different. They will be, what they're doing is phenomenal. I don't like when people poo-poo it and say, well, it's not the 80s. Well, hell no, it's not the 80s. I'm 50 freaking eight. I know it's not the 80s. Every day I wake up, I know it's not the 80s. So they're phenomenally assembled team. The way they play, Curry is a joy to watch. You know, last year we played him in the playoffs. We came in after beating the Clippers in the second round. Everybody's excited. We took the night off. And the next morning I came in and my coaching staff's there, and I looked at him. I said, okay, guys, we're all pumped up. We're going on the conference finals. All right, man, what do we got for Golden State? Let's have some ideas on how to stop them. And everybody starts looking at the floor like, yeah, well, I was like, oh, boy. I said, I feel pretty much like you guys do. I mean, I couldn't think of a way to say we can stop them. What are we willing to give up? And basically you say, are we going to go under on Steph and just make him make threes and take the ball out of everybody's hand? Well, the guy kills you. All right, we're going to put two on the ball. He throws it over to Green. Green drives the lane, and they kill you. All right, we'll leave Harrison Barnes. So we'll just screw it. We'll make Harrison Barnes beat. He does. I think in the finals, they were like, well, we'll make Iguodala beat us. That's Cleveland made a decision. Iguodala is the MVP of the series. They are really, really, really good. And I hope people don't get tired of watching them. And they should watch them because they are assembled with the rules the way they are. They are assembled to be a versatile team. Big, small, and Steph Curry is fun to watch. And let me tell you something, all those people out there, because Twitter gets, do this, do that, and none of that stuff works. I'm telling you right now, good luck, because everybody's always got an answer. Do this to Curry, do that to Curry. None of that stuff works. He's really good. That guy is impossible to guard. So I'm excited to. I like watching him. I'm excited to see if they can do it. Now they've gotten so close. I hope they do it. I just think that if someone wins 73 or 74 games in the NBA season, that is unbelievable.
It would be if they can do it. And both Mike and I think they're going to. Kevin, this was really a pleasure. It's always a joy to talk to you. Enjoy the golf today, and we'll try and get you up here in the playoffs to host with us for a day or two. Thanks a million,
Thanks, Kevin.
All right, guys. Always good talking to you. Take care, guys.